Well, welcome everybody to another Nexus webinar. I'm excited to have my new friend Jay Cranda on the call with us. Jay was hired as actually one of the very first online pastors in 2010 at Saddleback Church in California, where he is still at, with over a decade of experience of figuring out what online church connected to a local church discipleship strategy actually looks like. And he's helped thousands and thousands of churches through his website, ebooks, podcast articles, conference talks, and now as an author. His new book, Online Church Is Not the Answer, Beyond Stream. I just see it over his right shoulder there. So Online Church Is Not the Answer, Beyond Just Streaming to Hybrid Disciple Making, was just released a couple months ago. Jay oversees thousands regularly at the Saddleback Church's online experiences, offering Zoom discipleship classes monthly, launched hundreds of online groups and in-person groups, and he helps start house church expressions connected to their online community. And so really interesting work that you get to do. So Jay, thank you so much for being with us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to share things we've learned and maybe to help church planners and people thinking about doing stuff. I know not everybody gets to think about digital as much as I've been able to the last 10 plus years. So I love sharing any insights and maybe hopefully avoid some of our failures at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, that's one of our coaches said that, you know, COVID caused us to become all of us televangelists overnight. And not a lot of us did it with much intentionality, other than the fact that we have to be offering some kind of a church service every Sunday morning during that season. And it's kind of left us in this, ongoing process of feeling like it's something that we have to do. And it doesn't really get to be very intentional and things of that nature. And so I've always appreciated that about just the content that you deliver and just getting exposed to that, introduced to you back in probably May of this year. And so all the good, the bad, and the ugly with everything that you've been through in life and ministry, Saddleback, with all the recent changes and things of that nature, like walk us through what has like online streaming or online church looked at like at Saddleback for a long time now, right?
Yeah, our church has been streaming services since the early 2000s. And really that came out of a basic need to solve a problem, because we're in Orange County, California. We have a lot of people that head to John Wayne for work during the week, or they might be gone for a trip. And there was kind of this early realization, hey, we could stream our services and people could stay engaged. And so it wasn't to provide community. It wasn't to disciple a bunch of people. It was just to keep people in the loop if they're out of town for something. And because we were kind of in a area of the country that, you know, provided we could do some of those things, we decided to start doing it. And so early on, it was just streaming. And then what happened very quickly was we realized that people were watching, but you could do a lot more. You could do online giving. You could maybe experiment with groups. You could provide podcasts and things. And I think, you know, sometimes new tech gets introduced and I think it's like, oh, that's a cool, shiny thing. And then the question is it useful? And I think our church has always been a church that we will try a lot of different things, but it doesn't mean we keep trying it because we're like, that wasn't helpful. And so for us early on, streaming was very natural. And then what happened was, I think mainly what happened was there were a couple churches that were experimenting probably around 2006, 2007, 2008 with like internet campuses, they were calling them at the time. And it was streaming with chat and it became social and interactive. And then for our church, we experimented a little bit with that, but I actually think it was around 2010, we launched online groups. And that was a really new thing. And it was very different. You know, Zoom wasn't around and it was all through our website. And it was through a service called TalkBox. And that was actually the first time I think our church started to go, oh, like, you could actually do community through this. This isn't just like a video player where somebody watches it and maybe some chat, you know, old school forum type of experiences. This is actually social because this was audio and video and people are interacting. And Skype was around, but I think, you know, like most people, You know, some people on here will remember this. Like Skype was like worked, but it was clunky. It didn't always like you had to have contacts in your system. It didn't work. I think when our church did online groups in around 2009, 2010, that's when we started to go, oh, you could actually do community online in some aspect. Didn't mean we thought it was ever going to replace anything in person. We still don't believe that. But it was like, this is something. There's like a shadow there. I call it kind of like a fog. Like there's a fog. And as we move into the fog, I think every step we've kind of understood a little bit more what we're doing. And I think the fog is kind of leaving now, but it's still there. There's still aspects of our church that are different. So like today, it's like, yeah, we stream our services. We provide custom experiences on YouTube where like my team hosts, and we drive people to next steps so that we get them plugged into our community. We host monthly events on Zoom where people can hang out. I just came from an event where we do every Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. We do a weekly prayer set with our community where we're praying with people. We have giving that people give towards this experience. And then we launch house church experiences where, so if you watch online and you engage far away and we don't have a campus near you, we go, hey, what if you start something in your home? And like, I just came like, and we can get into this. I just came from an experience a couple weeks ago where I was in the Philippines, and we had a house church that started in Davao, which is South Philippines. And we just did an event we want to launch a campus there because this extension got so big, which is extension. Wow. Is our word for house church, but they had 200 people at this event I was at. And wow. It's just crazy to think that this extension, this house church, started from just people gathering and watching the services on TV, and they were all volunteer led. And now we're heavily considering launching a campus. And so like everything we've done the last, you know, 15 years, it's been just slowly figuring out, is this helpful? Is this helpful? And I think now I feel like it's like 89% there, and there's still like 11% we're figuring out.
No, that's good, man. Well, I think, before we dive into just all like the practical and the nitty gritty and things of that nature, I mean, just even in the layout of your book, I mean, you just kind of talk about just the fact that we just need to be open to the opportunity and just like naming even just the evangelistic opportunity to be able to connect with people where they actually are. We've gone through several different trainings or iterations. You know, Chris Abbott from like Church Marketing Universities, like talked to us a little bit about, you know, just how it's just viewing it like it's not marketing, it's ministry. And like, you know, just being able to set up shop and just being able to go into the digital spaces where tens of thousands and millions of people like exist and still need to hear the gospel. So when you just kind of unpack for people and just kind of like soften their hearts to be open to thinking digitally, what are some of the things that you talk about?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely something we have to wield very wisely. I definitely see it as I'm more of a half full type of thinker on this. You know, I don't generally like, I think the end of the world is coming, but I don't necessarily think it's coming in the next 100 years, you know. But everybody has their different, you know, perspectives on this and how you interpret and think about things. Generally, I one of my favorite examples, and I talk about this in my book, Tony Reichy talks about in his book, the Christian life, God and technology. It's something in that title, but he talks about the idea in the first book of the Bible, you have the greatest technical feat of its time. The ark is used to save humanity. And then a couple chapters later, you have the next greatest technical feat. The Tower of Babel is a negative. And I bring that up as it's technology, digital is something that we have to wield very strategically because it's like a fire. It can burn your house down or cook you a good, you know, make you a good cup of coffee. And I think we have to discern how to use it in our context of who we're reaching. And yes, there can be a strategy of, I call it the Amish strategy, where Amish tend to be not like anti-tech because they still use some technology, but they see it as distracting. So they try to minimize as much tech as they can. And yeah. I think a strategy like that could be a strategy if you decide to wield. But I also think that these are tools in our hands. And so I always jokingly say, if Paul urges Timothy to get circumcised for the gospel, I think we can use the internet. And so like our tools of our day, just wield it strategically. Maybe you don't need to get circumcised, but just use what God's put in your hands. And I think this is a tremendous opportunity. Now, I am not an advocate for using everything at your fingertips. I think you have to be super focused. And I think this is the hard thing, especially for church planners. Everybody is telling you that you got to be on TikTok. You got to be on this. You got to do that. Oh, have you heard about Meta's Orion Glass? Like, there are 1,000 things we are selling, and I say this to my friends at different companies that I love and respect, but every Christian tech company is telling you, like, this thing's going to save you and double your church. And I don't believe that that's necessarily true. I think you can do everything that you need to do without the tech, but I think the tech and digital can amplify what you're doing. And so but it comes down to strategically knowing your audience, your objective. And that's the hardest part, is there are so many noises, so many voices. And even in my book, like, I am not laying up like a promise or a here's the copy and paste strategy. I literally just say, what are you trying to do? Where are you trying to do it? And the question is, can digital and technology aid in that outcome? Now, I believe it can, but what's hard is that answer might look very different if you're in this part of Minnesota, if you're in Florida, if you're in New York, if you're in Davao, Philippines, or Hong Kong and Argentina. And so you have to figure out, okay, what platform to be on, what tools to use, what limited budget you have to spend. You know, the way it looks for my big church, you know, we have an online community. I have a team of 3, I have a budget. I'm traveling around the world. It's very different because we're a very large church. But if I was at a small church, and I really wrote this book for the church that's, you know, under 300, because that's the type of church I came to faith in. And so I think, I know I come from a place of luxury and privilege from my perspective, but I also believe it can be used for churches all around. Actually, the coolest ministry I'm seeing done digitally is actually like in the Middle East, where the church is forced to use digital because of restrictions.
Wow. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I think we should learn more from those churches here in the US and Canada, because it's like, you know, here we tend to idolize our buildings and our physical gatherings a little too much because we have so much freedom, and we forget that hour and a half a week is only an hour and a half a week, and digital technology can be used to decentralize and do ministry in a lot of ways without the building. And so I think if you combine it with the building, with all that together, it's a powerhouse. And so like that's how I would think about it.
Yeah, man, that's so many million questions that come up. I love the, oh goodness, just the intentionality. One of the things I learned from Ryan Wakefield from CMU as well was like, he kind of uses the analogy of like, kind of like spot watering your lawn, or like, we're just gonna put a little water here and then a little water over here. We're gonna move the sprinkler over here, rather than having a full like irrigation system as to like systematically go about doing certain things. And just the whole conversation about, you know, should we be on this platform or this platform, or should we be doing this? Should we be doing this? And then, you know, you run into the real cost of just time and resources that a lot of smaller churches lack, and being able to be intentional about some of that stuff is just as powerful. But I want to tell me real quick, like when you think of like overseas churches and how they're leveraging digital stuff, like what does that look like?
Yeah. So I've had the crazy blessing to be able to travel a bunch throughout the Middle East over the last 10 years and just work with churches on the ground and ministries doing really cool things. And it always blows my mind, you know, because they usually, if anybody's listening this, if you meet somebody who's doing ministry in one of those contexts, they really want to talk to you. And I'm always like, no, I want to hear what you're doing. Like, you're the one doing ministry. Like, I get paid to do what I do. Like, I'm not going to pretend like I always remind my team, like, we're in a crazy season of the church history that we get to get paid for what we do. Like, this is crazy. Like, this is not a normal thing in church history. Like, I don't know how long it will last. I'm grateful for it, but I'm not going to assume it will last my entire lifetime. And so in the Middle East, what I'm seeing in the Middle East and out and throughout, like, I would say South Asia generally, is there are a lot of things happening on asynchronous type of group experiences like Telegram and Signal, where people, because of, you know, one of the things a lot of people don't realize is that bandwidth is a economic like advantage depending on where you're at in the world. Not everybody has the ability to do video type of experiences because bandwidth is limited. This is even an issue in the United States. You go to rural parts and they don't have high speed internet that I would consider. You know, I'm running like almost a terabyte of data to my house right now. And I also pay for that privilege. You know, my internet bill is one of the most expensive bills I have. And the average person can't afford, you know, I think my internet bill right now is like $150 a month.
Yeah.
To think that the average American afford $150 a month is that's not realistic. And so one of the things is in some of these regions where internet comes and goes, you know, you're in places like I was once in a country and it's like I'm at the church and the power goes out and the generator turns on because they have rolling, you know, outages. These are real issues. And so with that, these asynchronous type of experiences where they are doing outreach and they are building communities in these large Telegram Signal groups, and they're doing groups and text-based experiences, and they have thousands of people. And they are doing it on these platforms because you have places like Iran that like blocks some of these providers, and they have to work with VPNs to go around. And so I'm seeing a lot of, again, it's that idea that where persecution happens, you know, God tends to still thrive. And so Why do we hear stories in China and Iran and all these countries? Because they have to figure it out. They can't publicly gather. They can publicly worship, but they can't publicly convert. And so these governments are trying to kill out over generations the Christian population. And so you can be a Christian. So like if you go to a place like Pakistan, they have like Christian districts, and they do that because you can't convert as a Muslim. And so they just want this district to just slowly die over a couple of generations, but it doesn't. And so like I see a lot of work being done on WhatsApp, Telegram, and these group experiences. And what they do is that they just allow you to, hey, you want to get into a group? And you don't have to share your name. You can just be kind of incognito because of security reasons. And people start sharing so much. You know, I have a couple brothers, and we share a lot via text. We tell each other things via text that we would never tell each other face to face because we're dudes and we tend to be emotionally dead at times. And so I see these group experiences killing it. On the flip side, I also see tons of some of these ministries, even small ministries, are doing a lot of digital advertising because they can't legally go door to door and share their faith in a safe way. And so they do a lot of Facebook, Instagram type of direct messenger type of ads. And it's really cool because they have to do it. And so like I was working with this ministry one time that they were doing work in Turkey, and it was like, they're literally doing ads. Now this was actually like a Bible society, but they had people on the ground in the country, and they were doing ads in the country. They would start to engage people private messaging. And then they would, to a point when it was secure, like meaning that they weren't being baited into something, they would actually travel to the place hours to deliver them a Bible and meet them face to face. And I'm seeing stuff like that where it's like here in America, and this is a generalization, but we just assume people should just show up on Sunday and come to our church because we got a cross on our building. And I'm seeing these places where people just don't walk into churches in these areas, and they have to be super proactive. And so some of the cool stuff is around those groups and digital advertising, even in small ways. And so it's really, it makes me, I remember coming back from something and I was like, I gotta do more digital advertising, because like, I think just more and more people are growing up not knowing what Christianity is. They don't know. And so we think even in places with tons of churches, like I remember talking to a friend in the South, and he was at a big church in the South. And he says, the funny thing is, I bet in California, you just get to evangelize people because they don't know what Christianity is as much. And in the South, we normally have to educate somebody that they're not a Christian before they become a Christian. And I think that's becoming more normal, both ends and extremes. And so, yeah, those are some of the things.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. Just think of, you know, just the necessity for digital and overseas, and just the luxury that it is for us here. But yeah, just being intentional with some of that type of stuff is really fascinating. I've just seen some of that. And yeah, I mean, just aside from the broadband issues or the bandwidth of, looking at, rural church in America, and a lot of our church planters are kind of in those same lines, where they're some of the smaller towns across the Midwest or different things. And it's a real issue. But I love that you keep coming back to just like the idea of just the facility itself, or just like our job isn't to like fill a room, like being able to walk through some of that stuff. One of your big ideas from your book, you mentioned you're just our job isn't to fill a room, but to help produce fruit in people's lives. And coming at this conversation from just a purely disciple making heart is a really interesting perspective, just because a lot of people just are just so negative on certain things. And I think it's maybe even earned over the years. Like I remember just a couple of years ago that I was just like, man, I just need to be exposed to more and more of these things. And I was sat in on a webinar of a guy talking about doing ministry in the metaverse or something like that. And then like this phrase come up of like, we're baptizing avatars in the metaverse. And I was like, what did you just say? Like, what does that even mean? And just being exposed to some of those things of like how digital missionaries are like thinking. And I'm just like, okay, there's so many things that I just want to say to something like that. But we have that in our mindset and in our culture these days. But being able to just recognize the fact that we're really after people's hearts, like regardless of where they're at. How do we balance the need to prioritize disciple making, while at the same time kind of helping people realize that technology is not the enemy? Because I even think that churches probably argued of like, should we have a landline phone inside the church building and stuff? Should we have a website, and just some of those the tensions that are involving there. But just kind of talk to the tension of maybe the negative reputation of maybe some of the digital things that people are, or maybe some of the nuances that you usually hear about more often than not, of like why people are just so negatively opposed to digital.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it is very natural. Anytime we have something new, it's very natural to we just don't understand it, and so we tend to reject it. And so I think, I jokingly say, like, the church is one of our greatest strengths is that we have preserved the faith for 2,000 years. And part of that is we have a long history of killing people that introduce change. And so anytime it's a double-edged sword. We preserve, but we also fight change. And we have to figure out, are the things we believe is really what they believed back 2,000 years ago? And this is where, like, the irony of the Catholic Church when they were fighting Luther during the Reformation. The popes and everybody, the bishops, they said, like, if you introduce the Bible into every language and the common language, you're gonna have a lot of crazy beliefs. And they weren't wrong. Like, it's part of that tension of now. I think the freedom of having the Bible in the common tongue is produced more good than bad. But I also understand, like, everybody now is a theologian or thinks they're a theologian, And so I think there is a tension to be scared. And I think we got to cautiously figure it out. It's like right now, like, there's all this data around the oversaturation of digital and social media and what it does to a young mind. Like, I think of it all the time. I got a 13-year-old, 11, and an 8-year-old. And, I just got my almost 14-year-old a phone. And we're introducing a lot of restrictions around that. And we waited till he was almost 14. And I didn't get it to him when all his friends had it at 10 because I wanted to control that. And so I cautiously leverage and think about technology in a way, because there are things, like, I think about the stuff I was exposed at, like, when I was super young versus today. It's totally different, even in a short amount of time. And so I think church leaders need to be cautious. But on the flip side, I do think we got to see it as, okay, God has put stuff in our hands. And I think there are things that we got to reject, and there's things we get to redeem. And I think a lot of these tools, there is more redeeming. Yes, there are terrible things that happen on the internet, but let's not pretend like there aren't powerful things that happen on the internet. And I bring up the example of, one of my go-to kind of illustrations is this idea of my wife and I. I was gone for like 40 hours. I spoke at some event, and her and I, you know, when I landed in Dallas, I texted her an emoji that my plane landed. She hearted it. And when she hearted it, like, that meant something to me. Me and her were connecting in that digital interaction. And then, like, I FaceTime her, like, when I got to my room later that night. I text her when I landed back home. I text her like, hey, we have this running. Whenever I come home after a trip, I run through In-N-Out. So I was like asking her what do you want from In-N-Out. And like, to act like that digital interaction with my wife and I isn't a good thing is crazy. It's her and I are able to stay connected while being separated, but that doesn't prevent me from not coming home to her at night. Yeah. Like, we still have a geo proximity type of relationship. And so I say that, like, relationships, how you use digital in a relationship is how you should think about discipling people digitally. See the potential of it. Now, on the flip side, digital can get in the way of my wife and I, our relationship. You know, if I use it inappropriately, it could lead to me looking at porn. It could lead to me cheating on her. There's all sorts of ways. Like, there's a double edge of that. And so I say that you gotta be aware how the tool can be used in a pro and a negative, and then decide how to use it strategically. And so I've been through enough of these waves to watch, like, oh, church online is not community, is not church. And what I don't like about that is I'm not trying to make the argument, and this is where I'm playing with the title of my book, is I don't think keeping people online is church. Like, I don't. But let's not act like experiences digitally can't have a part of your process, or even isn't a part of church. So, like, I always think it's funny that church leaders will really push on, you know, real church is only in person. And I would go, it's the irony that our primary relationship with our God is not proximity based. Like, the irony that we connect with our God in primarily a immaterial way. And to think that you're making the argument that distance is what real community is, and how we commune with our Father is not distance based. And I'm like, now, like, there's, you got to think about this in a way, like, there's so much potential, and you got to lean out where it's needed. The last thing I'll say here is anytime you introduce something new, it's always going to be scared. And I talk about this example in my book where, and some people here probably remember this commercial, but there's a famous news story that kind of circled the internet a couple of months ago. And it was a story about Burger King interviewing, people were being interviewed at Burger King because Burger King just introduced credit cards. And it was in, like, I think the 80s. And they're interviewing people at Burger King because they were still paying cash. And everybody's like, why would you ever use a credit card at fast food? And it was just like, I would never. Like, I always have $5, you know? And now the irony is how you don't even carry cash with you. And you could say the same thing true when PayPal got launched and eBay. It was like, well, I would never put my credit card online. I would never put my credit card online. And so I would say to any church leader, anybody do anything, I understand the gut reaction when something's new to go, I wouldn't do it. And I would just take a deep breath. You don't know where we're going in the next 10 years. And yes, maybe now you wouldn't do it. But like everybody said, like a lot of people say, I would never use AI. But guess what? When Apple launches here in a month or in a week, Apple Intelligence, and onboards, you know, hundreds of millions of people you start using AI, they go, oh, that's useful. But initially, when you saw OpenAI do it with ChatGPT, you're like, no, that's evil. But now when you're using it every day on your phone, like, the argument is it hasn't been easy enough and practical enough for you. So I just like to encourage church leaders, when you see something new and different, don't throw it out so quick. Just take a deep breath and go, you're just not part of the early adopters. You might be a late adopter to it. And that's how I like to think about it. Is like, I like tech, I like digital. I'm always thinking to myself, but I also understand not all this stuff is super practical. And so it's thinking like, and I just think we should be more open that this all comes from our Creator. And I think these are things we get to wield, but we do got to wield it strategically.
Yeah. That's, my goodness, man. That's fascinating. Of just the, yeah, the proximity thing that you're talking about, just like with the Father, you know, just walking through some of that, man, we could spend a lot of time on that.
Yeah.
Like, go back to that for just a second and just kind of talk through just the realization of where, like, when did you start thinking about just your faith in that regard?
Well, it was funny. I was actually on a during COVID, I was on a panel, and they had the theologian Daryl Bach on there, and I was like super. I geeked out because I think I have his Luke commentary here in my office, but I was texting my brother, and I was like, oh my God, Daryl Bach's on here, and I'm like a panelist on this thing, and he made that argument, and I use this illustration in my book, and I credit Daryl for it, but yeah, he was arguing like this idea that God is omnipresent and he's everywhere. And if we're trying to say online church is nothing, like is no expression of church, you're literally putting God into a box. Like you're putting church into a box. Like, and he's like, and he wasn't saying that not to limit it, but I think we all have to go through this. There's this constant humbling of ourselves. You know, there's that joke that we're all the hero in our own story. Yeah. And I think it's like, God is doing all sorts of things in all sorts of ways beyond just our framework and our paradigm. So like I came up, you know, I came to faith and kind of grew up, and my expertise has been in purpose-driven church strategy, because that's the church I was out in, like, you know, our founding pastor in his book, every millions, you know, 50 million copy plus. And so like when I traditionally have talked about church, I think of it one way, but then I see another ministry do a house church strategy or a discipleship strategy or a simple church strategy or whatever it is. And I'm like, oh, I remember going like, oh wow, God is using things outside my tribe, you know? And it's funny. It's, we like to, it's easy when somebody asks us a question to go, oh, just use this. And but we have to understand, like, if you've traveled at all, if you talk to people in different places, like you kind of like, wow, this is totally different. And so I think with me, one of the realizations is like, I try to not be as do this and it will like knock it out of the park. But I've just been able to see digital used in such powerful ways. And I'm not trying to make the argument it's better than in person. And I'm just going like, hey, like I'm forgetting the book name. I reference it in my book, but they talk about this idea with companies that digital will either transform or enhance what you're doing. And like Uber totally transformed the taxi industry. Like it's nothing. Like Uber totally transformed the taxi industry. But if you look at like a company like Marriott wasn't transformed. It was enhanced, because still you go to a hotel and book and you're physically present. Marriott's experience got enhanced by digital, the booking experience, the app experience. You can use your app to go in a room. And I like to encourage church leaders. I don't think the church is being transformed by digital technology. I think it's being enhanced. And I think, again, a lot of church leaders get scared. Well, like you talk about virtual reality baptisms. I go, what they're doing in VR, that's modern day evangelists. Like they might as well be in some tribe in some rural part of like the Amazon. Like I understand those are the stories that get told. And I know those guys, you know, it's like, you know, Pastor Stewart, Pastor DJ Soto, all these guys are doing amazing things in VR. And we do some stuff in VR, but I also don't think that that's what the average church should be worrying about. If it's around in 50 years, don't worry, your grandkids will figure it out. I would say like most of those people are just doing evangelism, but I just get excited about this stuff. And I just try to encourage. I think if more church leaders leaned into it in not an Amish way, but in an opportunity type of way, I think you would see more ways to do what you're trying to do. And I don't think it's just streaming church. I don't think it's just running ads and collecting tithes and having a website and social. I think it's actually, you can actually move people from point A to point B. You can move them from come and see to come and die. And I think you can use group experiences, Zoom experiences, LMSs, all these type of things to do really cool things.
Yeah, that's fascinating, man. One of the things that you mentioned earlier was just even in communication with your wife, where you're just like doing some simple forms of communication and it's still, you're still connecting. And, but then even in particular, like at the end of the day, like you still come home. Like there's the physical interaction of the connection there. And you talked a little bit about, I want to just kind of double click on that for a second, because you talk a little bit about, you call it the Tower of Babel, of the ways different people like prefer to communicate or to receive communications or give communications. And so I want to touch on that for just a little bit, but then also just even the generational piece with that of from just different generations of, 40 plus, 60 plus, 20 somethings, even younger, and the way that they kind of interact with the preferred methods of communication right now.
Yeah. And I love hearing how you actually read my book. And so this is like it's kind of cool to hear these questions, as long as you don't spot a spelling error. And so, yeah, so I have this visualization around the Tower of Babel. And so I kind of play it out like for fun. Like if you consider the Tower of Babel, the idea was, obviously the story is they were told to scatter, but they decided to stay stagnant in one place. And so God wanted them to go out, but they stayed. It's kind of like the Jonah story. And so the idea is, if we play it out, the on the ground is the farthest away from God, and at the tippy top is connection with God, the closest you can be with God, just kind of for fun. And I say at the tippy top, let's put face to face community for most people is like the best expression of community, face to face. Your Tower of Babel from bottom to top is going to be different depending your generation, your technology preferences. So like, for example, maybe at the near the top is virtual reality. Maybe all the way at the bottom is somebody calling you on a phone. Maybe in the middle is texting. And our experiences of what we feel is legitimate community that we're receptive to is going to be different. And so your tower and my tower are going to be different based off of my own preferences. I'm a pretty tech savvy person. I'm an early adopter. I'm sitting right here next to me. I have a Quest 3, I'm engaged in that. And I bring this up because do not build things and use things that are your preferences. Build and use things that are the preferences of the people you're trying to reach. And that's the hardest thing. This is why the most natural thing is to reach people that you're like. But what happens is, it's kind of like the bell curve where like you kind of reach a generation and then you have to either like your bell curve crashes or you start a new bell curve. And I watched Pastor Rick do this. Like he got into his 60s and he had to start a new bell curve because he realized he's like, okay, I started the church 30, 40 years ago. And if I just keep doing this, we're all going to die, and he would joke about that. And now we got to start a new bell curve. So we're going to do some things different. We're going to change our music. We're going to do this. And so I say that like, it's just that idea of understanding that the younger you go, they're going to use, like, for example, one of the biggest things that's very different the younger you go is some of these text experiences. You have platforms like, Slack, for work, or you have WhatsApp or like Discord, where people will share a lot. I think there's a lot that's going to happen. Church building and community building is going to happen on these asynchronized type of experiences that are via text. And what I mean by asynchronized is that like a synchronized group would meet, like a small group would meet on Zoom or at a home for an hour together. They would be physically present for an hour. Asynchronized is you go through content over a period of like 3 to 7 days. And you don't actually physically meet all simultaneously, but you interact on your own time through a period of time. So it's kind of like, instead of coming to classroom, you have a period of time to complete the content. I think there's going to be more asynchronous type of content. And you see this with Discord and all this. And so it's crazy. I will say the flip is one of the things that is something I've noticed personally is that there are some even younger generations that aren't as pro as digital at the same time, because I say that because a couple a month ago, I spoke at a college class, two classes back to back, and probably had 80 students. And it was one of my old professors. And I remember I was talking about my book and some of these things. And there were a lot of kids that were pretty, I would say, anti-digital. And one of the things I realized was they were anti-digital because they had done high school on Zoom. And it was really interesting because at the end of them, I had like 8 or 10 students come up to me and they said, oh, wow, Jay, I was pretty anti this and you kind of changed my mind. I realized. And so you're also going to have those movements. You're going to have people that are like, I tried that during Zoom. But like, I don't think a healthy digital strategy is getting everybody on Zoom forever. I think you link it together. I just think that it works together in a way that can be seamless. So like if you host, like our church, we host monthly membership classes on in person. every month we have this 2-hour class. And so if you come to our church, we say like, hey, get connected to people, show up to this thing, learn how to belong to our church family. And so like, I encourage our campuses. I go, hey, maybe you do 12 in person a year, but maybe you do 2 on Zoom in your calendar year for those who can't make it because, you know, of childcare or work schedule. Like, I was raised by a single mom primarily, and I know it was really hard because of our work schedule to be somewhere on Sunday outside of Sunday morning. And even that, she couldn't always be there. And so it's just that idea that use the platforms that are relevant for the people you're reaching. Again, the same way as Paul changed his verbiage. If he was talking to the Athenians, he would use this. If he was over here, he would literally, him and, you can actually see this in the Greek, Peter and Paul, and like, they would change the style of Greek they were using based off of who they were reaching. And that's what I'm making the argument here, is use the tech that makes sense for the people you're trying to reach. And don't be scared of a platform because you don't like it. Because again, you're not using the platform because for you, you're using it for the people you're trying to reach. And so, and that's the hardest thing, is that that's the thing I've noticed the most about digital and technology, is that because we all use it, we all have opinions. It's just like the Bible, where because we all have access to the Bible, we all have opinions on that. And so if I say, I believe in this, you'd go, well, have you thought about this verse? And we can argue forever. And so I think that's the hardest thing but I just think with technology and digital, we got to be more ready to use it for the sake of getting the job done that we want to get done. And that's usually to reach people, disciple people.
That's interesting. I wrote a book earlier this year called Digital Body Language. And it was really fascinating around just how we interpret different things based on like just the text that we use, or different or even just generationally how people will interpret digital communications in different ways. And that was some people will be more formal, some people less formal, yeah, and things of that nature. And it's just a really fascinating subject to just trying to understand like how people are using things, how people are interacting with things, but how people are leveraging just the creativity involved. Like just like what you're sharing, was that it was a pastor's class that you said, like 12 months a year?
It was a ministry class at a university, at a Christian university. So it was all future church leaders that were in this room. And yeah, I mean, but again, I thought there are a lot of movements. Like you have like churches that like John Mark Comer was at, you know, Bridgetown, like they just announced they stopped live streaming their services. And, you know, everybody is like, oh, and I'm like, no, I mean, Bridgetown is like a pretty minimalistic type of church. I mean that in a good way. Like they're very focused, and they're trying, you know, they're trying to figure out how do we drive people to come in person while also doing things digital. They're still uploading their sermons to YouTube and Facebook and all these things. They're just not going to do a live stream. And so you have these movements where like people are saying use less tech, but they're also still, and I think we got to figure out that line. It's all going to look different for us. It just happens to be people think, oh, we're a big church, so we're using this, and we're big because we use it. No, like we use it because of our strategy and our people. And so, and this is why I think this is why I wrote my book, is if you're planting a church, if you only have a couple hundred people, you're getting all this noise of things that people telling you got to have an app, you got to do this, you got to be whatever. And it's like, it could be so distracting. And my hope is just focus on what you got to do. Like, again, like you mentioned it, like your job is not to fill a room. Your job is to produce fruit. And can that tool help you? Again, I think about all the tech and digital that you use in your daily life. It most likely solves a problem. And so there are things that would be nice, but I'm a super futurist in my own way, but I honestly don't buy a lot of tech unless it really helps me. So like a dumb example, I use like Google Home and Google TVs in my home. So we have Google Homes all throughout, and Google TV just announced a new device, and it was like $100. And I have an old like $39 Google TV in my bedroom. It looked cool, but I was like, I don't need to spend another $100 for this other device. And because like my $39 one does the job. Now, when my $39 one breaks, I'll get the new one, but it's the same reason why I have an iPhone 13 and I don't need an iPhone 16. My iPhone 13 does everything it needs to do.
Yeah.
And so like I'll update. Now I'm going to watch how Apple Intelligence rolls out here in the next couple of weeks, and it's really cool. I might update, but like my phone works. Like, I don't need a new phone every year. Like, and some people do because they really like that, but that's not how I'm wired. I'm on a budget. I want to be super strategic, and I'd rather use that money to take a vacation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's even an interesting conversation, is just as a status symbol. Like, you have the newest.
Yes.
Paper, and I think that attitude often, like, maybe even just creeps into the church as leaders in worship ministry, of just like, oh, I need to have the whatever, you know, and just, or you see another church doing something in digital and just be like, well, we need to be on that and doing this or that. But it's a lack of intentionality on their own part based on their own vision, but rather just trying to imitate somebody else's success or methodology. And one of the things that you mentioned, I really do want to get kind of a little bit practical here as we close, of just, what are some different ways people can actually leverage utilizing digital connecting spaces? And so you mentioned a couple times, like, doing like groups on Zoom, and it's funny just because earlier this year, like, was actually my first experience of being able to do I do Zoom calls all day long, but I've never done like a small group locally on Zoom. But we did that based on the season of our life right now. And so we have like 3-4 families in our neighborhood, but we all have a ton of kids. And so, like, our family has 4 kids, another one has 4 kids, another one has 2 kids. And so with 3 families, we have 10 children under the age of like 13. And so it's just like trying to... Nobody wants to babysit that, first of all. Like, none of us have like houses that are conducive enough for that many children. And so we just like decided, like, all right, 8 p.m. on Tuesday night, we're going to do our best to have kids like fed, in bed, all the things. And then we're going to start life group at 8 p.m. on Zoom. And it was just based on our season of life, just an opportunity to utilize something to do something like that. And so you mentioned just even like whether it was trainings or pastor's classes or any number of things. You talk a lot in your book about utilizing digital for children's ministry or student ministry or this ministry or that ministry. Just give me a couple of high level creative ways that people are delivering just great discipleship content using digital.
I would say first, and I talk about this in my last chapter, but I really believe it's unfortunate how high a barrier of entry it is to plant a church right now. Meaning you have to raise capital, you have to find space, you have to take on risk. And one of my big hopes with, you know, this book and even just future tech is that people can actually plant churches first online, in the sense of building an audience, and then confidently go into a physical experience and the wisest way possible. So I think that's going to be something we're going to continue to see in the coming. So instead of like signing a lease for a year on a space and having to fork up, you know, tens of thousands of dollars and rent and buy gear and all this stuff, like, you could just start doing stuff on YouTube or maybe on Instagram, and then like, oh wow, we have a pocket of people here. And then you can do a Zoom event for people in this region and go, hey, I really want to plant a church. Would you be part of it? And people and you can actually, so before you actually ever spend dollars on the ground in a region, you actually have confidence that God's moving in that area. So that's one of the practical things that I think we're going to see a lot of people coming out of seminary doing that more, because they're going to see some of the most popular streamers online right now, like on Kick and Twitch. These guys are streaming online, and then they'll actually go travel to these places, because they see, oh wow, we have a bunch of people in the Netherlands, and they'll travel, and it's like crazy. And so I think that's going to be on the church planting side, we're going to see more of that in the coming decades. And that gets me really excited, because I think a lot of church plants fail more because they spend too much capital in areas that maybe they shouldn't have spent. And maybe they could have lasted another year or two if they wouldn't have spent that much. And so that's one practical area. I think so. I would probably, two like very practical things is, one is, I do think the Zoom experiences can be a really positive one if you do them right. And so, and what I mean by that is, a lot of people during COVID kind of check the box and say, oh, I did Zoom, I don't like it anymore. You know what I mean? But I think we forget how powerful that was during COVID for a lot of things. It does solve a problem. It is super convenient, and it can be powerful if you do it right. And so I think there are newcomer type of events. There are certain types of trainings that throughout a calendar year that you could say, hey, let's do a 30-minute Zoom connect. And maybe like I think people forget, like, again, if you're a follower of Jesus and you're somebody who goes to church every week, you tithe, you're in a group, you serve, like, you're going to go to anything. You know, it's that argument I heard from John Wooster one time. He said he made the argument that, you know, a member or a core person would drive an hour to church, but their friend will only drive 15 minutes. And it's that argument of, like, you might have a ton of people in a region, but the friend is not going to drive that far. And so I say that, like, there are a lot of people in your community that are uncommitted and maybe staying another hour for that thing or driving in on a Tuesday night or a Thursday. Like, that's a huge commitment, but maybe they could just join a Zoom. And so there are different types of things like that that are super helpful. Now, I will say, one of the things we do very well now, and we've learned this through a lot of trial and error, like, we have a 2-hour membership class that we do every month on Zoom. What we do is we try to make it as social as possible and not just sit there, have your video off and watch. And so one of the things we do is I kick off the event, and we'll have anywhere between 15 to 50 people on this every month. I kick it off and I say, hey, welcome to, you know, Activate One. It's all about belonging to church family. I introduce myself. I go, hey, we're going to go 5 minutes into breakout rooms. And what we're going to do in the breakout room, you're going to introduce yourself and how you're connected to our church. And we go, boom. And I say, hey, guys, if you don't have your video on, turn your video on. We're going to do this 3 times in the next 3 hours. I know, and I make jokes. I know it's weird. It's going to feel like a blind date. You're going to be thrown into this room. You're not going to know somebody. I go, but, like, because we're on Zoom, like, I want this to be social. And then we do it. And then I do that for 5 minutes. I bring it back. I go, okay, we all survived, right? Okay, we're going to do it 2 more times. And what I do is, and then we do some teaching. And then what we do is we do 8 minutes of discussion in groups. And I try to create table environments on Zoom as much as we can. And then what I'll do as the leader is I'll jump around into the rooms and just say hi. And so those are the things. It's not just turning on a Zoom, but you got to think strategic. How do I make this social? Because people want to be heard and seen. And I try to encourage church leaders as much as possible, there's tons of ways for people to watch things and view things, but you got to move viewers onto video. And if I can see you face to face, I think it's a more compelling experience. And so try to think of experiences, not just to get more views on YouTube or downloads on podcasts or more, you know, views on Instagram. How do you have a video experience like this where you can see their face, look into their eye, and then maybe even connect them? And so there are things in every church that I think that practically makes sense, where you can move a program maybe a couple times a year on Zoom. And I bet you do it out of convenience, but also to better accomplish that strategy. I use the example in my book of, we had a parents event where we had, we did this big event. We wanted to help parents, you know, raise their kids. We did it on a Saturday morning and it totally bombed. And the reason is because we're asking them to do all these things and then also show up on a Saturday morning. And then the thought is our objective to fill a room? No, our objective is to help them be biblical parents. And we actually moved that whole program and that whole strategy to a podcast strategy, because we felt like, you know what? We could do a monthly pod, and that's actually more helpful, because we actually want them to show up on Sunday, be in a group, serve in a ministry. Those are the primary. And the podcast strategy was good. Now, I don't think a podcast strategy is the answer for everything, but I think that was one practical way. The other thing is, for most church leaders, I would just say real quickly is, I think a texting email strategy where you do it every week is probably the most underlooked, unsexy tech ever, but it will do so much. Like, I write an email to my community every Sunday morning at like 6-7 a.m. I do it every Sunday morning, and I have for like 8 years. And that's one of the primary ways that I keep people in the loop. And you might go, well, Jay, that's like an 80s marketing strategy. Yeah, I'm not trying to use fancy tech. I'm trying, and texting, another thing, like, I have a group of my volunteers that I just text regularly. And so again, think of the job you're trying to get done and what's the best job. And so I'm always trying to convince people, like, it's not about using the new tech. It's about using what's effective. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's interesting. And I love, oh goodness, what was it? You said something. The creativity in being able to connect people, whether that's just the opportunities and that, oh, that's what I was going to say, is that this, the opportunity that most people have to actually attend church is so much less and less now, like, just statistically, right? I mean, people are engaging physically in worship spaces at like less than they've ever been. And so if that's our only opportunity, our only strategy as church leaders is just to get them on Sunday mornings to attend church service or to get them in person at a life group, like just the amount of times people are willing to give us as church leaders anymore is so much less. But being able to make it a reach or an education or talking about just different things accessible to people is just so important now. And so how do you, I mean, I'm sure that you're fully aware of all of those type of things. Like, so I love the idea of just the podcast, the idea of making like pastor's classes, like very accessible and things like that. And so with very small churches, like it might be less and less in very rural areas, but for a lot of churches that are probably even beyond 150 people, like people's schedules are just crazy these days. Yeah. And so it's just the opportunity to be able to engage with people more than just being a one trick pony is pretty paramount for a lot of church leaders. Other than like podcasting or Zoom calls, streaming our church services, what are some ways that even smaller churches can continue to leverage digital in different areas?
Yeah. You know, one of the strengths of, you know, kind of the internet, you know, that has been introduced is that there's an abundance of information, but now there's an abundance of noise. And so you see this with, you know, TV companies, even you see it like the audiences have shrunk drastically of how many people watch television shows and movies. People aren't going to the movies as much. It's because there's just so much to be done. You know, I could be entertained more on YouTube than I can by a movie now. You know, and I say that like there's so much at our fingertips, but there's so much distraction and so much entertainment. And so I think this is the double edge of the opportunity that we're in, is that we get to use these tools, but we're also competing with everything. And so this is why, like, you know, movie studios are shutting down and bleeding money. And so I say that is because like attention is valuable. And so when you're asking people to show up to something, I think we got to be honest about what are we asking them to do? And you can see that as a negative. Wow, I got really shallow people or whatever. But I would go, no. They're not full disciples yet. You are discipling them towards a realization that life is about more. And the reason why, if we think about the oddity, the reason, like if I think about this, every week I have three kids. We make it a priority to get up early to go to church. We also, we go to church. Also, I drop my kids multiple times during the week. They serve in different things. I'm constantly going back and forth. We also have a small group. We also serve in ministry. I also give, you know, a portion of my income yearly to my church. Like the things I do from an outsider are the weirdest things. You know what I mean? Like, I do this because I believe there is a God. I believe that Jesus is my savior. Jesus changed my life. And that truth is truth to me. And that's how I live my life, because I think there's so much more. And so like, I say that, like your church attenders, I think part of the pros and cons of kind of the freedom we have, especially here in the US, is that we have a lot of casual attenders. And I think COVID kind of fleshed that out a little bit. COVID realized the people that are really committed versus those who were kind of not that committed. And I see it as, some people go like, wow, like that sucks that people aren't coming back to church. I go, no, it does suck. But I also like, I love the idea that we get to have people sit in the back rows and maybe they don't really believe it yet. And we get to continue to have opportunities to share the gospel. Like, I love that opportunity. I don't get discouraged by it. You know, COVID was a reality for a lot of churches of maybe those who are actually committed. Again, just run the data. How many people actually tithe at your church? You'll find out how many people are really committed. And I know it isn't 100% of your attendance. And I say that like there's a ton of things pulling our attention, but we have to understand, we have to mature people towards that. And the question is, can you use digital or some technology experience to do that in a way that's a little bit less friction? And so like, for example, it could be a texting strategy where you're interacting with people and you're dripping content. It could be a YouTube type of event. And so there are tons of practical things. One of the things that probably people experiencing this right now have experienced, but I always like to encourage people with social media that we we get the opportunity to enter into somebody's feed and we get to be a presence of the church in their daily grind. So if just think about this, you have people that are working 9-to-5 jobs, maybe barely living check to check. They're experiencing the pressure of inflation and their money's going far less than it used to. They're stressed. They're in their feed. They're seeing noise about the election and conspiracy theories and some new movie and something pornographic or something. And then your church pops up in that feed. Like, and my argument is, don't let that content that you post just to be about showing up on Sunday or showing up to this event. Don't use it as a, you know, Vegas billboard thing, you know, use it as an opportunity to encourage them in their week. They may have just gotten an argument with their spouse. They may have just been chewed out by their boss. Maybe they had to make a questionable decision at their workplace. You have an opportunity as a church leader to encourage them and remind them what life is about. And it's kind of like reminding them, lifting their head up, that life is so much more than their current situation. And so I think creating content, very simple content, it doesn't have to be a lot, but simple content to keep people encouraged. It's kind of like raising kids. We're like, you know, like if, you know, if you're a parent, you're around, you're like, sometimes your kid will be upset about they did bad on something or they're flustered. And our job as a parent is to kind of remind them of the larger strategy. It's like, yeah, like, you know, like one of my sons, like, didn't do something well. And I go, I had to remind him. I'm like, you're smart. You kill it. I go, this bad grade is not a big deal. Like, and I always joke with him, like, you're way better student than I ever was. But I think it's that idea that we get to be that shepherd in the social feed. We get to actually shepherd. And I think that's actually, and I bring it up because it's a free thing. It's a thing that we get the ability to be on these platforms for free. Yes, they're monetized with our data. Like, you know what I mean? All these like other complicated things, but they're free platforms. You know, 100 years ago, that would have cost us money to advertise on these things. And now we get to just post stuff. And so I think there is stuff like that, that I know, like, you're like, Jade, social media has been around for like 15, 20 years. I know, but like posting maybe twice a week on Instagram is a really simple thing. But if you think of it as I get to shepherd them in the midst of their crazy noise filled life, I want our content to show up in those things. And I think that's something to consider.
Yeah, well, Jay, thank you so much for your time, man. Guys, if you're watching this or live, or you're watching it via recording a little bit later, check out Jay's book. Online church is not the answer, and I really love just the tagline, just because it's the heart of everything that you just said, beyond just streaming to hybrid disciple making and really pointing people towards the Lord and just focusing in on the gospel and just being able to be creative in the ways that we're able to deliver all of that. So also, is it jcranda.com?
Yeah, jcranda.com.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you guys can connect with Jay. He's got a ton of resources on there, a lot of different content on there. Connect with him. So if anybody asks any questions during our time that we didn't actually get to, feel free to reach out to Jay directly and do that. But Jay, thank you so much for your time, man. So grateful for you and your ministry and everything that you do.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome. See ya.